Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm now joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. James, the Telegraph has got this story this morning that young middle-class professionals are half as likely to get on the housing ladder as they were 20 years ago. Is this a total disaster for the Tories?
Yes, because owning your own home, or what status of home ownership you're in, is one of the principal determinants of how you vote. So the fewer homeowners there are, the worse it is for the Tories. And I think what is so dangerous here is the last election, the behaviour of renters has never been more different than the behaviour of homeowners. And I think one of the reasons for that, obviously part of that is to do with the generational divide about Brexit and the like. But I think a big part of it is that people now are far less likely to think that they might become a homeowner in the next 5 years than they were previously. People are resigned to renting for the rest of their lives. And if you're renting, you don't have the same stake in the economy. I mean, the Tory party cannot expect people who don't have any capital to be capitalists.
Katie, can the Tories do anything about this?
I think there's lots of things they could do. The problem is they don't really seem, or at least Theresa May doesn't really seem to want to do anything that bold. And you have this, in a way, it's a duo which doesn't really work, because you have Theresa May, who I think the thinking is that she would be happy to spend more money on this, to, you know, borrow for infrastructure purposes. And then you have Philip Hammond, who doesn't really want to spend much more money. The Chancellor wants to be austere on this, but he would be happy to relax the planning permissions, things like on the green belt, brown belt. But Theresa May doesn't want to do that, because there is a big chunk of the Conservative vote that really do like the view from the house that they already own. So it puts them in quite a dilemma as to how to redo it. And we saw a few weeks ago Nick Bowles, the Tory MP, basically take to Twitter and take a blast at Theresa May, saying that she was too timid. And this was because he'd gone to Downing Street with more radical ideas for housing and had basically been brushed away, and it had made him very frustrated, and that was then felt across the party. So I think it's dangerous in terms of the next election, but it's also dangerous in terms of Theresa May's day-to-day life. Because Tory MPs, there is a growing number who really recognise this as almost an existential threat, and they really want action quickly, and if they don't see the government doing something, I think you increase the chance of, whether it's a leadership challenge or just very lots of dirty laundry, you know, something like that happening.
James, the other story today is that Theresa May has travelled to Berlin to meet Angela Merkel. Do we know what they're going to be talking about?
They're going to be talking about Brexit, and I think the inevitable question in the press conference, if there is one, will be: Do you now, Chancellor Merkel, know what Theresa May wants? Because at Davos, it leaked out that Angela Merkel had done this impression of Theresa May, and their conversations, which went something like this: Angela Merkel would say to Theresa May, "What do you want?" Theresa May would say, "Well, make me an offer, Angela." And Angela Merkel would then say, "No, hang a second, you're the ones leaving the EU. You've got to tell us what you've envisaged a new relationship to be." And Theresa May would then say, "Oh, no, come on, tell me what you'll give us." And it meant that the German Chancellor never knew what Theresa May wanted. I think the German Chancellor will probably not know in that much more detail what Theresa May wants at the end of this meeting, because the UK government still hasn't settled its position on the kind of details of the kind of relationship it wants on trade with the EU after Brexit.
But Angela Merkel is in a slightly difficult position, as she has these negotiations going on in her own government. Is that going to affect conversations?
Yes. I think it's having one effect, which I don't mean the German government would radically change Germany's Brexit position, but because Angela Merkel is so distracted by trying to put together a coalition and the weakening in her own position, that Germany's Brexit policymaking has been driven much more by the German Foreign Ministry, which is more federalist, is more inclined to take the Commission line than the Chancellery.
Katie, May is also going to be delivering this speech tomorrow. Do we know what she's going to be saying?
Yep, so this is the second in the roadmap to Brexit. We've had Boris Johnson's, obviously, this week, the United Kingdom. It's fair to say, I think they got a mixed response. I think maybe mixed is charitable, because lots of people are quite riled by it. Theresa May's speech is going to have more details than Boris Johnson's speech had. And she is going to be talking about security and basically hugging the EU close, saying, "We're going to stay with you on security. We're going to keep sharing information." I think she's going to also say that the UK wants to remain part of the European arrest warrant and Europol. There are some in the Brexit camp who I don't think would be overly thrilled about these things, because then you have ECJ jurisdiction, and also the European arrest warrant annoys some Conservative MPs in the sense that why you could take a British citizen to another part of Europe and try them. They don't. I think there are questions about the terms on that. But in general, the idea is by doing this, you improve the mood between Brussels and the UK, and that greases the wheels so that you get to a better stage when Theresa May finally decides what she does want. And they might be like, oh, okay, yeah, great.
Let's just finally talk about UKIP, because the party is facing this crunch meeting tomorrow, and members will be deciding whether to back or sack Henry Bolton. Katie, what's likely to happen?
After it was revealed that Henry Bolton had left his wife for a younger model, an action model, Jo Marnie, it was then revealed that Jo Marnie had sent texts which were racist about Meghan Markle, Prince Harry's fiancée. That led to a no-confidence vote from the UKIP executive, and now it's gone to an emergency meeting, which will see all the members who do turn up get to vote on whether they want to support that no confidence or keep Henry Bolton on. And I think what's quite interesting is the mood seems to have changed slightly. So you have Nigel Farage in The Telegraph actually arguing that that the party should vote to keep Henry Bolton in place. I don't think anyone's thinking that Henry Bolton is, you know, going to be one of the political greats, but there is a question when it comes to UKIP's future, which is, Can they really manage another leadership election financially? They don't have very much money. And yesterday, it seems that they're going to get a very hefty bill for this defamation case, which could also bankrupt them in theory. And also, what is the point of UKIP? Because Henry Bolton's argument is that actually, instead of having a 3-month leadership contest, we should be trying to put the fire on the Tories at the head of these kind of crunch meetings to go for a harder Brexit. This seems a good idea in theory, but what's odd is UKIP haven't really managed to do this since the EU referendum results. So there's little reason to think that even if he does stay, they'll be able to do that now.
I think it's very hard to see how it has a future in its present form, in that essentially it was a Nigel Farage party, and you pull Nigel Farage out of it and the whole thing starts to collapse. I suspect there will be room in British politics, slightly regrettably, for a kind of immigration restrictionist party at some point, but I don't think that's going to garner that much support. I think the nature of the Brexit deal will obviously slightly determine what space there is. But I think really what UKIP was, it is now that Britain is leaving the EU, its whole purpose, the thing that kept together this bizarre coalition of libertarians and protectionists and all this, has gone. The whole raison d'etre of the party no longer exists.
Thanks, James. Thank you, Katie. And just a reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. Just a reminder that we've got a special subscription offer to The Spectator. If you get 12 issues for just £12, which includes full access to all of our website and apps, it now also comes with a moleskin notebook worth £20. To get this, just go to spectator.co.uk/podoffer.